Welcome to the Gila Members Community Radio Show, Earth Matters. Earth Matters brings you in-depth coverage of local, state, and national environmental issues. We aim to inform, challenge, engage, and inspire our listeners. Three hosts will alternate weekly shows to bring the listener a broad range of topics and expertise. Your host today is me, Donna Stevens, the director of the Upper Gila Watershed Alliance. The Upper Gila Watershed Alliance, or UGWA, is a watershed protection nonprofit group that's been around for almost 20 years. We work to protect the Gila River and its tributaries and the Gila National Forest through advocacy and by doing restoration projects. Today's show is about a pretty huge topic, human overpopulation. And my guest for the show is Tori Grass, a retired public health nurse who's been concerned about this issue for a really long time. Welcome to Earth Matters, Tori.
Well, thank you, Donna. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, I'm glad you could be here. I know that you wrote an article about this issue for the Desert Exposure a few months ago, so I know you've already done a lot of research. So I wanted you to first explain, what do we even mean by the term human overpopulation?
Human overpopulation, or overpopulation in general, is really described as a condition where an organism has exceeded its carrying capacity. Now let me explain what that means a little bit. Imagine you had a fishbowl, and you had four guppies in that fishbowl, and you had a 10-day food supply for those guppies. But one of those guppies had a bunch of babies, and you now suddenly have eight guppies. And so you're going to run out of food a little bit quicker than you had planned. Perhaps 6 days has gone by, you've run out of food, you don't have any more food for your guppies. Your organism, the guppies, have exceeded their carrying capacity. They no longer can survive in that finite environment of the fishbowl. They have used up all the resources that you have. You have an overpopulation problem with your guppies in your fishbowl. When it comes to humans, of course, it's a much, much more complicated and bigger issue. It's not just about how many human beings can the Earth support. People have been asking that question for a long time. No one's come up with any answers. It's much bigger than just numbers. We have to ask ourselves, if we care about people, we need to talk about their quality of life, and we also need to realize that overpopulation isn't, once again, just a number issue. It's a social, economic, and a political issue. We have to talk about quality of life. Do we have the resources that we need in order to have a decent quality of life? Do we have adequate drinking water? Do we have adequate food? Are we safe? Are there resources enough to educate all the humans on the planet? So it's not just a black and white issue. It's not cut and dry. And I know that many people would argue that, you know, overpopulation really isn't a problem. I think if one cares about people and really looks at the fact that our resources are finite, overpopulation is a concern and one that impacts so many other social, political, and economic issues that we face in this country. Currently, we've got, I'll throw some factoids out at you, Donna.
Yeah, good.
I'm not an expert on this. I want to clarify. This is just something that's of great interest to me. We currently have 9.2 million children that die every year from preventable diseases, diseases that can be prevented by vaccinations and early access to...
Worldwide.
And all of this refers to global facts, global issues. 900 million people do not have access to safe, clean drinking water.
Wow.
And we have 967 million people that are considered malnourished, that don't have adequate sources of food. So we're already looking at a problem as far as our finite resources. With the 7 billion, you know, we reached a population of 7 billion early this fall, so we have now surpassed that. So with our current population, we are already dealing with, in some areas, people having very poor quality of life without access to reasonable resources, food, water, education, adequate housing, safety. So I think that we definitely do fit the description of being an organism that is exceeding its carrying capacity.
That was just what I was going to ask you, if you think we're already at that point. So you've just answered that. I mean, you're saying there's, what, 900 million people who don't have access to clean water?
That's right.
I mean,
that's
and that makes you sick. You're susceptible to all kinds of diseases
that's
then.
Right.
And
that's right.
That's about 1 in 8 people on the planet, 1 in 7 or 8 people. It's already pretty serious. And I think in southwest New Mexico, we have such a low population density that it's sort of hard for us to believe sometimes that there's a problem.
It is, but if you look at the fact that overpopulation has many social impacts, and it's once again not just about numbers, because Grant County in the southwest New Mexico is really we don't have a high dense population. That's why many of us have chosen to live here.
Right.
But we do see the consequences of overpopulation in the world because we are all connected. What happens on the other side of the world does impact us here. What happens on the East Coast or the West Coast or the Midwest does impact us here. We are all connected.
How do you think that those issues on the other side of the planet affect us?
Well, that's a whole other thing that we can talk about. For example, the Midwest has experienced a tremendous drought this past summer,
yeah,
as we have. And some people, it's clearly climate change is one of the things that is impacting that, the change in rainfall patterns, whatever one wants to believe the causes of that climate change are, it is changing.
Mm-hmm.
And so, because of the drought in the Midwest, the ability of farmers to produce crops where they have historically produced tons and tons and tons of corn, for example, and corn is in everything we eat and use, and it's even in our gas tanks, their ability to produce corn is greatly diminished because of the drought and the changing climate patterns. Where they could once grow corn and have a good season, growing season for corn or other crops, that is changing, and it may not be suitable for growing corn in the future. So as a result, here in Grant County, some of the products that we purchase that contain corn are going to go up.
Mm-hmm.
And so food prices are going to change, and we're seeing that. We're seeing increase in food prices in all areas.
Right.
As resources become depleted, the cost of those resources goes up, like gas.
And that disproportionately impacts people who are already struggling financially.
Absolutely. And that's the quality of life piece. That's
right.
What we see here in Grant County.
Yeah.
Is that quality of life piece. Because there are many people in Grant County that live below the poverty line, that have difficulty accessing resources.
How did you become interested in this issue?
Well, back in the 70s, I went to nursing school in Tucson, and I lived in Tucson for about 9 years. I'm originally from the Midwest, so the Sonoran Desert was just an exotic thing of beauty to me. It was so very different than the Midwest. And I really grew to love the natural world and the natural beauty of the Sonoran Desert. But while I was living there, I would repeatedly see, acres and acres and acres of the fragile desert bulldozed for housing developments.
Mm.
Over a period of years, I would drive a certain route to go to school or to go to the grocery store or whatever, and this beautiful open desert that I would see for many years, I'd go by the next week and it was just bulldozed,
yeah,
because of urban sprawl. And it was pretty heartbreaking. And I did leave Tucson and move here 30 years ago for that reason. along with many others. Also, as a nurse working in pediatrics and public health, I saw many of the social and economic and personal impacts of unplanned pregnancies and inadequate health care for women and children, and lack of education regarding reproductive health and options. You see very, very personal, very real impacts on individuals' lives. And I do believe that we're all in this together, and I do believe that we as a society and a culture need to provide the tools to all of its citizens to be able to make good decisions in their lives, to have access to health care and information so that they can make good choices.
Can you talk a little bit about some of the impacts of family planning and the impacts of not having access to family planning?
Well, then we're talking about some of those things that I mentioned earlier when we were defining what overpopulation is, and to recognize that overpopulation isn't just about numbers. It's about all the social and economical and deeply, deeply personal impacts that overpopulation has. Human beings have always tried to control their fertility. In the past, people had lots of babies because 50% of their children would die before the age of five of communicable diseases like whooping cough and tuberculosis and just simple diarrhea from drinking contaminated water. People had lots of babies because lots of babies died.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have health care. They also had lots of babies because if you had lots of kids, then you'd have all this free you'd have this free labor that you could put to use on the farm, and that of course was before all the mechanized farming. So having a large family had economic benefits. That's not the case anymore. We have mechanized farming, and now it is financially a lot more difficult to have large families and to support large kids. It's estimated, here's one of those factoids again, Donna. It's estimated that there are 215 million women in the developing world globally who want to delay or end their childbearing but have no access to contraception.
Wow. 215
million women who want to voluntarily access contraception and family planning services but cannot because those services are not available. Also, half of the pregnancies in the United States are unplanned. And the problems associated with unplanned, unwanted pregnancies include, it's huge. If a woman is unable to control her fertility because she can't access family planning services, she's likely to not be able to access health care, and her health is going to be impacted in a negative way. If she can't space her babies, she's going to have baby after baby, and the child's health is impacted negatively in that way as well. She's more likely to live in poverty. There's much more likely to be slower economic growth, and oftentimes, and we do see that here, even in Grant County, the education of the man and the woman is often ended as a result of unplanned early pregnancy or is certainly interrupted.
Let's talk about that some more after we come back from a break. Stay with us. Welcome back to Earth Matters, the show that brings you in-depth coverage of local, state, and national environmental issues. If you're just joining us, my guest for today's show is Tori Grass, a retired public health nurse, and we are talking about overpopulation issues. Just before the break, Tori was talking about some of the impacts of lack of access to family planning. And I want to continue on with that, Tori. What are some more of the problems that women in developing countries experience because they don't have access to family planning, and not just women in developing countries, but also right here in the good old U.S. of A.
I'm glad you clarified that, Donna, because that's very much the case, especially now, especially in the last 10 years when access to family planning services in the United States has been greatly diminished and under attack. But going back to those 215 million women in the developing world who voluntarily want access to family planning services but can't get it in the huge number of unplanned pregnancies, even in the United States, there are lots of impacts to them as individuals and to us socially and culturally. When a woman is unable to control her fertility and is unable to space her pregnancies or access health care because perhaps of the distance to a clinic or because of lack of money, the result of that is poor maternal health. If a woman can't space her pregnancies when she gets pregnant a second, third, fourth, or fifth time, it impacts her health negatively. It also impacts the health of the baby, and we have problems like low birth weight babies or babies that are born malnourished to begin with. So for a woman to be able to get reproductive health care and to get prenatal health care for a planned pregnancy makes a huge difference in the lifelong health of that mother and that child. Another impact to lack of family planning services and information, and I want to remind everyone too that also includes education. That also includes knowing how your body works, anatomy and physiology, reproductive health care. That's an important piece in comprehensive reproductive health care, is education. Women who are unable to access family planning services, and men for that matter, are much more likely to live in poverty. And if you have a lot of people living in poverty, you have much slower economic growth. Those people don't have money to buy gas or to buy Christmas presents, or they don't have that extra money for consuming goods. They're basically just trying to get by to buy food and shelter. So poverty and slow economic growth are a direct impact on lack of access to family planning. We also see globally and here locally when there's an unplanned pregnancy or lack of access to reproductive health care and contraception. There's poor education, poor literacy rates. Both men and women interrupt their education if they have an unplanned pregnancy. And in many parts of the world, women are denied education. We also see increased conflicts over resources. Now, think about that definition again of overpopulation, where the numbers of organisms exceed the ability of the environment to support it. If you've only got so much water and you've got a lot of people that want that water, there's going to be conflicts, there's going to be wars over resources, over that water, over that food. So you also see increased violence in cultures where there are inadequate resources for the number of people. You also see environmental degradation, and you can see it's quite visible when you look at pictures of the developing world and people that are gathering firewood to cook, and the entire countryside is denuded of any bush or plant or tree. So environmental degradation is a huge part of lack of access to family planning and reproductive health care services. So really, overpopulation is an issue that impacts everything. It's all connected.
Why are there barriers to women having access to family planning? Is it political?
Well, yes, overpopulation is a political issue. It is an economic issue. Some people don't have money to buy condoms. Many health insurance programs consider it not medically necessary to cover contraception. And that's a battle we've been having in our country for some time. Hopefully that issue has been resolved now.
And yet a lot of those plans here in the U.S. cover, for instance, Viagra,
right,
which is somehow considered to be essential, but birth control is not.
Right, and that's another layer of the onion that can be peeled. And we say, why is it then that our culture included, why is it that some cultures feel it is appropriate and reasonable to provide comprehensive health care to men, including medications that address erectile dysfunction? And so we have to look at what's the gender inequity issues that we're dealing with there. I think that they're very real. I think that they're very much alive and well, I'm sad to say, and it's quite disturbing.
Yes, I think you are right about that. So some of the things that I've read in the little reading I've done on this issue is that empowering women can really have profound impacts on family size, and the education of girls can really reduce the numbers of children that they bear. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I will talk about that. And you know, before I start on that, though, I do want to say a couple more things about family planning. And family planning's been around a long time. And I think we can learn a lot by looking at history. And we have, you know, family planning really has been around since the 60s. And there's many, many facts, and I won't bore you with more factoids, Donna. but
I like factoids.
Well, you know, providing family planning to citizens is incredibly cost-effective. We know that for every dollar spent on providing comprehensive reproductive health care, we save about $3.74, and that access to voluntary, affordable reproductive health services, which includes contraception, has long been recognized globally as the most effective tool to reduce fertility, improve the health of men, women, and children, decrease poverty, and protect the environment. That goes back, all goes back to, you know, the impacts of overpopulation on the world. And the two most powerful determinants of fertility for women is reducing infant mortality, and that goes back to that little piece I told you about where in some parts of the world women have lots of babies because 50% of them die before the age of 5. That still occurs in some parts of the world. Fortunately, it doesn't occur here. But women have less babies if they know their babies are going to survive. Mm-hmm. And that means health care availability for children. That's affordable. And the other powerful determinant for decreasing fertility is exactly what you asked last, and that is education and empowerment of women. So I'd like to talk about that a little bit. There's been a lot of discussion about that in the last several years. Fertility is a lot more, it's a lot bigger than biology. There's many factors that impact a woman's fertility rate. Certainly her health. Mm-hmm. Religion, if you look globally at this issue, religion has a very powerful impact on a woman's fertility rate. The culture in which she lives and her economic standing in that culture. If she lives in a culture that values her solely for her reproductive influence, she's likely to have little or no political or economic power. Women in those cultures are often denied health care, they're often denied education, and those are the cultures where there's high fertility.
Mm-hmm.
if a woman lives in a culture where she does have more autonomy, she does have more decision-making power and more access to resources, and education being a huge factor, birth rates are lower because women make the decision to space their pregnancies and to limit the number of children they have because it improves the quality of their life, and that includes economic quality of their life and the quality of life that their children then have. So improving the status of women and the ways in which our cultures value women worldwide is crucial to lowering birth rates, addressing the overpopulation problem, and stabilizing world population. There's been a huge amount of attention paid recently to empowering and educating women worldwide and addressing overpopulation from that perspective. I don't know if you read the book Half the Sky. It came out a number of years ago. It was written by Nicholas Kristof and Cheryl Wu Dunn. It's called Half the Sky, Turning Oppression into Opportunity for Women Worldwide. And I think PBS recently had a two-part documentary on Half the Sky. So if any of the listeners are interested in learning more about the incredible effectiveness of empowering and educating women and its impact on our quality of life, I'd recommend that book and trying to view that PBS documentary called Half the Sky.
I think I'll check that out. It's interesting, I think, that you brought up the whole culture of women and how women are perceived in different countries and regions. Uh-huh. And I mean, I know that I read several years ago that Italy has one of the lowest birth rates in the world, and you can't get much more Catholic than Italy. I mean, there's the Vatican and the Pope right there, and yet their culture is such that women are empowered and they do have access to birth control. So it's religion, perhaps, in combination with other factors.
Well, you know, that's an interesting point, too. Religion certainly can be a barrier to addressing our overpopulation problem, but it isn't always. The leadership of religions oftentimes acknowledge and encourage wise and, religious leaders oftentimes recognize the impact of overpopulation on quality of life and encourage their followers, their participants, to make wise and responsible decisions in regards to family planning. Other religions, the leadership might say one thing, and yet their followers do another, which I think is what you're talking about in regards to the Catholic Church. In that, the Catholic leadership has a particular view that isn't shared by the followers. It's, you know, the whole issue of overpopulation and family planning is deeply, deeply personal. Mm-hmm. And I think, this is my personal opinion, is I think it really is a human right to be able to make those choices with correct information and to be able to access those medically essential services. I do not believe any government has a moral authority to decide that for anyone, man or woman. I don't think a religion has a right to do that either. I think it is a human right.
I agree. Let's talk about that some more after we come back from the break. Welcome back to Earth Matters, the show that brings you in-depth coverage of local, state, and national environmental issues. Actually, for today's show, this is more global because we are talking about human overpopulation. My guest today is Tori Grass. If you've just joined us, Tori is a retired public health nurse who's been concerned about this issue for a very long time. Before the break, we were talking a little bit about some of the issues of educating and empowering women and how this can have pretty profound impacts on family size.
Well, Donna, you know, at the very beginning of our conversation, we were talking about how everything is connected. Our country, this state, this community. We are not isolated from events and conditions in other parts of our country or the world. Everything is connected. And it is very clear that that improving the status of women worldwide is crucial to addressing many of the crucial problems that we face worldwide, including decreasing birth rates, stabilizing population. We know that access to family planning programs, voluntary access to family planning programs, improves maternal and child health. It decreases poverty, increases literacy, and stabilizes the economy as well. The strongest force of lasting change and improving the quality of a man or a woman's life is education. And that's something that we have to look at on a global, from a global perspective as well as a local perspective. You know, we have many young people in our community who don't have accurate information about anatomy and physiology, family life education, sexuality education. And of course, a person cannot make good decisions if you do not have correct information. Withholding information, withholding facts and information from anyone is immoral. So education and empowerment of women is crucial to solving some of the world's problems.
We've talked a lot in this show about the social problems of and health problems associated with women who don't have access to family planning and having too many children who don't thrive because family is too poor and can't really afford to feed all these children, and now they're malnourished. I want to switch gears a little bit now and talk about some of the environmental impacts of overpopulation.
I think that some of the environmental impacts of overpopulation are easier for us humans to understand because we can see it with our eyes. You know, think about when I was living in Tucson in the 70s and I was describing the bulldozing of the fragile Sonoran Desert, and visually that was very jarring to me, very tragic to me. So we can see very clearly the environmental impact of too many of us. Those photos of you know, poor African folks who are going for miles to gather sticks and twigs to build a fire to cook, those are very powerful visual images. And so I think the environmental impact is easier for most of us to wrap our heads around when we're talking about overpopulation. If you have finite resources and an ever-growing number of consumers, you're headed for problems, and we're already seeing that in our country.
You talked earlier in the show about carrying capacity in context with humans, but so, I mean, there's a certain amount of resources on the earth for all living organisms, and so if there's more humans, that must mean that something's got to give somewhere, and there's fewer of the other animals that we share the planet with. And I mean, we're seeing all kinds of species extinctions right now.
Right, and actually there was some recent global research that showed that the destruction of animal natural habitat is approximately 1,000 times faster than natural rates of extinction.
Wow.
You know, think about the Gila. My husband and I recently spent a lot of time out in the Gila National Forest and other natural forests. But, you know, I really noticed, I have noticed a change in the Gila as a result of, I'm assuming, drought due to climate change and the fire that we had this spring. The forest is so quiet.
Hmm.
I don't hear birds when I go out.
Yeah.
I rarely see a red-tailed hawk. I used to see red-tailed hawks 25 years ago, 30 years ago, almost every day, even in my neighborhood, which is in city limits. So I'm, in my short time here in Grant County, which is 30 years, I have seen environmental changes as a result of all those factors that are connected to overpopulation. Once again, everything is connected. and our caring, our quote, carrying capacity is also changing all the time. Our ability to produce foods is changing because of climate change.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe we could feed 7 billion people at one point, but perhaps in the near future we won't be able to because of the climate change and our inability to produce the number of crops that we did. So it's fairly logical that as the numbers of organisms, or in our case humans, increases, resources get depleted. And as resources become scarcer, it impacts all the other creatures on our planet.
Yeah.
And there's increased conflict about those resources.
I was just thinking that, how as more and more people move farther out from urban areas and want to live more in more natural areas or closer to the forest, there's a lot more conflicts with wildlife. I mean, people being attacked by mountain lions because they're living in mountain lion habitat now. And, you know, those mountain lions have been there for thousands or, I don't know, millions of years maybe, but now there's people living there and they don't always coexist very peacefully.
No, they don't. You know, we share the planet with other species, and I think we sometimes behave very arrogantly in the way we behave, the way we live, and the choices that we make. Some people would argue that high-density urban populations are a way to be better able to manage our resources and protect wildlife.
Mm-hmm.
I can look at that and see the logic of that, but given the choice, that's not an environment I would choose to live in. So it's a tough one. It's a tough one. And once again, this is a very deeply personal issue. How do we do this dance? How do we balance our needs and our wants? Of course, our wants are always far greater than our needs.
Yes.
That's very subjective. How do we share this space and these resources with all the other organisms? I'm not sure I have any answers to any of these questions.
Well, raising the question is kind of the first step of, you know, realizing there's even a problem.
Well, I think there is other. It is a first step, and it's an important step. But I think we have to look at our own individual habits and our own individual lifestyle that we have. You know. I am an optimist, and I do think that the little things that we do in our own lives, the individual choices that we make in a day-to-day existence do make a difference. For example, I see my neighbors drive their kids to the bus stop, they drive 3 blocks to the bus stop so that their kids can get on the bus. And I understand that being concerned for the safety of your children. I'm a mom too. I get that. But is that a good choice when probably you don't need to burn the gas to drive the kids the 4 blocks to the bus stop, and it would probably be a benefit to walk with your kids and keep them safe.
Right.
And get some exercise and teach your kids to get exercise and teach your kids that it's selfish to burn gas to drive 4 blocks to the bus stop. You know, those little decisions and choices we make about the impact we and our personal lives have on the planet, I think are important.
I think we've talked a lot about overpopulation on a global level, and I wonder if you could talk, if we could bring it back a little bit more to our very small Grant County level, and how overpopulation issues are impacting us right here in southwest New Mexico.
Well, I'm going to say it again, Donna.
Say it again.
We're all connected. What happens on the other side of the world impacts what happens here and what we experience. It impacts us economically and socially, politically. Environmental and social impacts of population growth do not recognize national boundaries or state boundaries or even county boundaries.
Yeah.
We're all connected. It impacts all of us. It impacts our economy, national security, and our environment, obviously. We're all affected by global events. And there's many examples of that. I think we talked a little bit about the drought in the Midwest and how that's quite likely to cause an increase in food prices for us.
Right. And longer lines at the stores because there's more people and more traffic. And
yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot to this.
Another one, you know, as far as the economic piece too, Donna, is, you know, all the talk about the debt crisis in Italy and Greece, that has caused some real financial concerns in this country, in the Eurozone as well as this country, and lending rates and job creations and taxation, and even now a discussion at which age people will be able to retire in the future. So what happens on the other side of the world affects us here in Grant County. As I mentioned before earlier, too, these global issues related to increased population create conflicts about finite resources, and water is a big one in southwest New Mexico. I heard that there are some concerns that our water from the Gila and the Arizona Water Settlement Act, which you know a lot more about than I do, I've heard some concerns that there may be an urban grab at our rural water. I know that people are concerned about that. It has happened historically. It
yes,
can
it has.
Happen again. So water is important to us in a arid environment, and our resources here are limited. So that's a very clear local impact of overpopulation.
Let's take a little break here. We'll be back in just a minute to talk more about overpopulation. Welcome back to Earth Matters. I'm your host for today's show, Donna Stevens. And if you're just joining us, my guest is Tori Grass, a retired public health nurse, and we are talking about overpopulation. Right before the break, we were talking about how overpopulation, even though it's a global issue, impacts us right here in southwest New Mexico.
Donna, we were talking about how events and circumstances on the other side of the world impact all of us, even us here in rural Grant County. We're all connected. We were talking about water and how that's a big issue. In the southwest, another big issue is immigration. And people have very strong feelings about immigration, good or bad, or, you know, the problems that illegal immigration causes. And I really am not qualified to go into that much. I think the issue really is people will always migrate if there are resources that they perceive they need and they cannot get in their home country. Maybe that resource is a job. Maybe that resource is education for their children.
Mm-hmm.
People have always migrated. People will always migrate. Organisms migrate to areas where there are richer resources. So I think if we as a nation want to address the immigration issue in a more effective way, I think we have to look at the causes of migration. Why do people leave their home countries and want to come here? Maybe it's because there's better health care. Maybe it's because they can get a job. It's quality of life. As we said in the very beginning, overpopulation isn't just an issue about numbers. It's about quality of life and what human beings will do in order to improve their quality of life. So looking at the causes of human migration are important. Also, in Grant County, to bring it home again a bit more, you know, in Grant County we have a high number of unplanned pregnancies. We have a very high number of kids living in poverty. We have a very high high school dropout rate. Domestic violent rates are high. And we have, as a result, a high dependence on social programs, which has an enormous cost to all of us.
You were saying earlier how every dollar we spend on family planning is a really good bargain, because we spend far more in social services when we have children from unplanned pregnancies.
Exactly. And if a woman can't access prenatal care or can't space her pregnancies because she can't access family planning, her health is worsened, and the health of her children are worsened, which really means that during their lifetime, far more money needs to be spent on maintaining their health or trying to recover their health. So all these social programs are hugely expensive. $3.74 is what we save for approximately every dollar we spend on family planning programs.
Yeah. So there's so many issues associated with human overpopulation, and yet it ties into so many problems that we experience here, but so many people are so reluctant to talk about it. We've spent almost an hour here now on what many people consider to be kind of a controversial topic, and I wonder if you could address, Tori, why this is such a sensitive issue, and why there's even environmental groups that won't touch human population problems. Why do you think that is?
Well, I've got a theory.
I bet you do.
I really think that the pro-life, pro-choice, or another way of putting that, the abortion debate, has really hijacked to the detriment of all of us. It's really hijacked the real issue of overpopulation and personal responsibility. Overpopulation, family planning, abortion are deeply personal issues. And they tend, well, our country is increasingly polarized, unfortunately. But I think that people and organizations avoid discussing family planning because in their minds and the minds of many others, family planning equals abortion.
Mm-hmm.
It does not. And it's unfortunate that this very volatile debate has hijacked the real issue. Overpopulation and its impacts on all of us is the real issue. In my 35 years of pediatric public health nursing, I have never met anyone who was pro-abortion. And I think people sidestep the discussion because they don't want to offend. They want to be politically correct, and or because of they've got their own internal conflicts about it. It is a very sensitive topic. But I think it's extremely important for us to talk about it and talk about what the real issue is. It's not a discussion about abortion and whether it's right or wrong. It's a discussion about overpopulation, personal responsibility, and making good choices individually and collectively as a culture. What is the humane and reasonable, responsible, and moral thing to do? Of course, we all have different opinions about that. But talking about it, the overpopulation issue, and recognizing it as the real problem and not being silenced by this volatile abortion debate is crucial.
It always seems to me that it's just plain common sense to think that if women have good access to birth control, that there will be far fewer abortions. And so that's why I'm always a little surprised by the resistance to even providing family planning for women. I mean, you would think that if a person does not like abortion, that they would be all in favor of birth control. It seems like a logical step to me, but...
Well, actually, historically in our politics, that was the case. There was tremendous support in the 60s and 70s for family planning programs because, I mean, you're absolutely right. You can look at the numbers, you can look at the facts, and if women have access to family planning services, voluntary family planning services, and correct reproductive information, it results in fewer abortions.
Do you think that some of the sensitivity around this issue has anything to do with the fact that in certain countries, perhaps China, India, there have been times when There were government policies that limited the number of children a family could have?
I think so. And they're actually, people often bring up the example of China and the one-child policy. That's not a voluntary family planning program. Certainly, that's a coercive one. And I don't know anybody who is in favor of coercive, involuntary family planning. That, in my mind, is immoral. As I said earlier, I think the right to choose the number of children and the spacing of your children is a human right. But I think we have personal responsibility that we individually and collectively have to look at and say, okay, what are the best tools? What has proven to be the best tools to address the many problems that we face? And we have to be willing to talk about it. And we also have to be willing to open our minds a little bit. We in this country can sometimes be a bit puritanical and have a hard time balancing the way we want the world to be with the way the world really is. Mm-hmm. Certainly, in the world, certainly it doesn't look the way I would like it to look. But I'm not the queen, so...
Too bad. I wish you were.
I'm not sure even the queen could, you know, have much control over that. But it is important for us to talk about it. Discussions about family planning does not equal discussions about abortion. The facts clearly show, and you're absolutely right, Donna, clearly show that if women have access to family planning services and correct reproductive information, there are fewer abortions.
Mm-hmm. What do you think are some of the suggestions that our listeners could take to heart if they're interested in learning more about this topic or getting involved in some way? What can they do?
Well, we've already talked about a whole bunch of different things. One thing is you can find ways to reduce your personal impact on the environment. Walk your kids to the bus stop instead mm-hmm. of driving those four blocks. Eat less meat, turn the thermostat down, plant a tree. Everyone's heard those things before. So looking at your own personal habits and your consumption patterns, I do believe those things make a difference.
That's a really good point, because it isn't just, as you said many times, it isn't just about the numbers and how many people there are, but it's also how many resources those individuals consume, because a person born in the U.S., has a far greater impact on resources than a person born in, say, Bangladesh.
Exactly, and we have finite resources, and there are a lot of people that we need to share the piece of pie with. So looking at our own lifestyle, I believe small acts and habits do make an impact on our environment. Other things that people can do is to educate themselves about overpopulation issues. There's a tremendous amount of information out there, some really good resources. One of my favorites is an organization called Population Connection. It used to be called ZPG back in the 60s, which stood for Zero Population Growth. And you can find them on the web. Planned Parenthood Federation is an excellent organization that provides excellent voluntary reproductive health services for women. There's also an International Planned Parenthood. Those are both on the web. You can limit your family size. Have one or two kids instead of three or four. You can adopt.
That's a good one. I've been sort of thinking about that in the back of my mind throughout this show. Limit your family size.
Well, but what about many of us who are beyond a childbearing age? You know, that's a done deal already.
Yes, it is.
But those of us that are beyond childbearing age can support programs that provide those services to young men and women who do want to control their fertility, who do want to be sexually responsible and improve the quality of their life. So we need to support medically correct, age-appropriate family life and sexuality education in our schools.
Mm-hmm.
We need to support the school-based clinics that provide important services in keeping our kids healthy and giving them correct information and decreasing unplanned pregnancies.
Right. And we could contribute financially to some of these organizations.
Absolutely.
25 years ago, we had a Planned Parenthood clinic here in Silver City, and it's long gone.
It's long gone, and what happened with that was that public health then picked up that piece of providing family planning services to low-income women, and they still do that, and they do a very good job of that with extremely limited staff and underpaid staff and limited resources. One of the problems we're seeing is, because we're in a rural area, those services are even harder to come by because the resources are being pulled to urban areas now. So you can also call and write your legislators and let them know how you feel about it, that you support family planning initiatives and reproductive health care for all men and women. They need to hear from you. We have some legislators who have done a really good job and have a real good track record with addressing overpopulation issues. Senator Tom Udall has a real good track record, as did Jeff Bingaman.
Well, those are some really good ways that people could get involved with this issue and could have a positive impact and limit your family size. You'll have more money. You can go on more vacations. So,
but you got to watch your carbon footprint with
yes,
those vacations,
Donna. Yes, you do. Yes, we have some really tough choices to make these days, no matter what we're doing. So I want to thank you very much for being on the show today, Tori, and I hope that everyone will join us next time for another Earth Matters show.